Good morning, everybody. As far as we know, we've got quite a few people on the line this morning, so thank you all for calling in. And you may have read in our magazine that we're going to talk today about how we can get through these few winter months. Now, because it's more of a conversation than us just sitting here talking, and there are one or two things we do want to get across, and Gray's here with me today. As soon as possible, we're going to unmute you all today so that this can be part of a conversation, because I'm sure one or two of you have got some great tips that we haven't included in our suggestions. So it'd be lovely to hear from you today as well. Just a reminder that these calls are recorded. This particular call, the monthly call on a Tuesday, is recorded so that those that couldn't call in can go to our website and listen to it as well. So if you have any concerns and you'd rather not say anything, we quite understand. Another reminder that when we are unmuted, remember that not to identify yourself, so we don't want anybody giving out their personal phone number, for example. That would be an option for some people that perhaps aren't as nice as all of us to ring you later on. So please keep your personal details to a bare minimum so you can't be identified on that recording. Now, those of you who have had the time to go through our magazine will hopefully have read that we've given a couple of pages over this time to those hints and tips that will make getting through the darker days a little bit easier. And one of the things I think that we, Gray and I, would like to talk about is the seasonal affective disorder. Because according to the British Journal of Psychiatry, it is probably three times more likely that those with a visual impairment will get this seasonal affective disorder, sometimes known as SAD. I'm sure that's what you've heard it called in the past. So I think being prepared for that and knowing that that's what's causing it is something that might make you feel a bit better about it. It's actually quite likely to be the fact that those light receptors that are damaged for those people who have low vision are actually causing that. That the lack of that stimulation to those cells means that you are going to feel that in low light, which is essentially what winter is, you are going to feel quite down. But it's almost a physical response to your low vision. So don't feel it's just you not coping. It's not that at all. And there are some things you can do to perhaps help that. And some of those are listed in our magazine. We've talked, for example, about sitting next to a window. So whatever sunlight that is, make the most of it. Some people might choose to change their lights in their homes, perhaps in your favourite chair, to have a bright light that stimulates those photoreceptor cells that are still working to their very best, if you like. You might be able to get outside. That, we know, makes a big difference. I was talking to a lovely lady yesterday who said going for a walk for her really makes a difference. And I think if you can call in to our speaker call in, I think it's March when we have Dr. Sarah Bell, she'll talk about the impact of nature, not just during winter, but actually how you can make yourself feel a lot better by getting out and about. That's really important. So some simple things. And if you really feel that you are feeling very fed up and you do feel down, and it could quite well be this seasonal affective disorder, you might like to think about buying a specific light box. But I would have a caveat on that. And if you do want to do that and take it to that extreme, please either have a chat with us or speak to your GP, because depending on what your condition is, that may or not be helpful to the existing sight you still have. So just a word of warning there that perhaps buying a light box dependent on your sight impairment may not be something that will benefit you in the long run. But for many, it could be the answer, just to boost your morale, if you like, putting it in very layman's terms, and make you feel slightly better. So So that's something, I don't know, Gray, if I've missed anything there that you want to add to that, because I've been rambling on a bit.
Yes, you do ramble.
I'm good at rambling.
Really good. Well
and
done.
Rambling, as we know, is good for us.
I was just listening to you. I think the this isn't just about winter blues, is it? Improving lighting in your home is good at any time of the year, particularly for reading and whatever. There are types of bulbs, true light bulbs, for example, which have a spectrum of light which is good for you. I used to work in safari parks and things, and I used to keep all these extraordinary animals at home. And we used to use a true light bulb in a lot of the tanks because they had the spectrum of light which helped produce vitamin D. Mm-hmm. And vitamin D is used in the calcium in your bones and all that sort of thing, how you lay down your bones. So I know we cover diet in a minute, but vitamin D is an interesting thing. So lighting is a vast, vast subject from health and well-being, but also for improving daily tasks. So if anybody needs any help or advice about that, give us a call. Do you want to talk a bit about keeping active?
Yeah, absolutely. Just before I forget, though, that issue of vitamin D, I was reading a paper the other day that said the majority of people during winter actually are vitamin D deficient.
I take it.
So that's something that our callers might like to consider, because it isn't in, just to make it very clear, you know, many of our members will take one of the eye supplements, and of course vitamin D isn't included in that.
No, I didn't know that.
No, A, C and E are in most of the ARADS, I always think of it as a recipe, the ARADS recipe is A, C and E. So vitamin D could be something, but I don't, another bit of a caveat, just check with your doctor first, because it is more common than we think, and a lot of people are having injections. In fact, she won't mind me saying my daughter is vitamin D deficient, so she has to go to her doctor every 3 months and have an injection of vitamin D. But she is quite convinced it's getting better, so maybe it's something it teaches the body to absorb, who knows, by having large amounts of it.
So my partner and I have been taking vitamin D during the winter months for the last 2 years, and it's made us easier to live with each other.
We won't go into that.
No, that's a bit extreme. But it's certainly we don't have the same conversations about how grey it is outside.
Yeah,
and
it's about boosting your general well-being.
It could also be that although there are recognised health benefits, it could also be a little bit of the placebo effect as well. That could be very powerful.
And it really doesn't matter, does it? As long as it's making you feel a bit better.
Well, one of the medical things about vitamins, and I'm sure I'm right in saying this, going back to my A-level biology, is that the vitamins and minerals that we take into our bodies that are not required by our bodies, we excrete.
You do indeed. It's no good eating loads of oranges, because once you've got your daily recommendation of vitamin C,
it flushes
down the loo.
That's it. Right. Okay. Let's talk about keeping active.
Yeah. I think that's something that's really important. Now, no one is suggesting that we all sign up to run a marathon. I think that's really important to get across. This is about being active within your capabilities, whether it is that you've been watching a film in the afternoon because there's something really interesting on and you've been sat down for an hour and a bit. I think the recommendation is if you can make yourself stand up, because it's all about blood flow, isn't it? And we want that blood to go to the back of the eye. The last thing we want is to starve the eye of the oxygen and the nutrients it needs, because the blood is a bit slower. So even sitting in your chair and pedaling your feet, grasping, making a fist out of your hand, anything you can do to increase the amount of mobility or the activity you've been having for the last maybe an hour or so.
If I remember back again to my biology education, which was 35 years ago, I seem to remember that veins have little valves in them.
They do, just
and when you move... It's actually your movement of your body which helps force. It's that helps force blood around your body, which is good for your brain and all your organs, and it also keeps you warm. Getting warmth into the extremities. My partner suffers from Reinhardt syndrome, which is a genetic condition which during the cold can stop blood flow in the capillaries to fingers and toes. And it's really dramatic when it cuts in. Fingers go completely white. You look like a dead body. And it, actually it's most painful when the blood starts returning. So as you warm up or you put your hands into warm water, the fingers start getting their colour. It can be very uncomfortable. Well, that is the same, obviously, for all of us. If you're sitting still doing nothing for an hour or two, getting the blood moving around your system is a good thing to do.
Definitely. And unlike the energy company that apparently sent out top tips to beat the winter cold, suggesting everybody should do star jumps or put an extra layer on or eat porridge, we're not saying do star jumps, please.
No.
But it's just something within your capability. And if you are able just to walk down to the end of your garden, if it's a safe to do so, it's not an icy day, again, that's going to hit two buttons. You're getting that brighter sunshine, you're getting some fresh air, you're getting the movement, which will keep that blood supply going. It's really important, isn't it? And I think we're all slightly worried, particularly with so much information about how much the energy is going to go up, whether it's gas or electricity. I think keeping warm and the movement is going to be one way, because I know myself, if we're working from home, as I think all of you know, we are doing that from time to time at the moment, sitting down at the desk for over an hour, I suddenly do feel cold, even though the central heating is clicked on at 20 degrees, which is perfectly adequate, really. I do feel cold as soon as I get up, walk around. So it's just a reminder, really, but to do so safely, because if you've got very little sight left, it's best to do so in a safe environment. So it could be your own home, couldn't it, where you know where all the furniture is, rather than if you're staying with friends and family and you suddenly think, oh, I ought to leap up a minute because she said I've got to get up again. Please just be a bit careful, because if we don't know exactly what's around us, it can be a bit scary.
Let's talk about eating well. I've got a situation with my parents-in-law, and my mother-in-law has got very severe dementia, which has come on very, very rapidly. And my father-in-law is 89. They've been struggling, and we've been trying to help. And one of the things, I see we've got it in the newsletter here, is about ready meals. And obviously, if you can get to the supermarket, you can buy them there. But also, there are companies like Wiltshire Farm Foods and Oathouse Meals. So you are getting a good hot meal every day. I think that's really important.
And you can always improve those, because if you're a clever person, I was talking to a lady last year, and I was saying, oh, you know, it's good to add extra vegetables. And I said, you know, as long as you're still able to prepare your vegetables, you know, peel the carrots. Well, she looked at me as if I was a complete idiot and said, what do you mean peel carrots? Have you not learnt that Mr. Sainsbury's sells them ready peeled and ready cut up?
God.
And I thought, well, actually, that's really sensible, because if you are at risk of, you know, perhaps your sight's not so good anymore and you find cutting things with a sharp knife a little bit more dangerous, actually, she's quite right. They are available. Fresh vegetables, you can buy them even frozen in little packets that you bung in the microwave that steam them. Add those to your ready meal, and of course you're boosting the amount of fresh vitamins. And there is some evidence, apparently, that microwaved vegetables are probably better for you, because they don't have the amount of water to cook them, and therefore the vitamins don't leach into the water. And it's the best and the safest way to cook anyway, for those who find hot boiling water, pans of boiling water, are dangerous for the best of us. So, you know, add things to your pre-cooked.
And you don't actually lose vitamins through the freezing process, do you?
No, you don't.
So
and
good.
You know the old thing we used to say, spinach and kale? Well, personally, I can't bear kale, because it smells like the cow barn to me. But I quite like spinach, but I used to buy these packets of spinach, and then you think, oh, for heaven's sakes, I'm still eating it. And it does, well, we've all seen it, goes a little bit yellow. It's the lutein that shows when it goes yellow, that shows it's the stuff you should be eating in the first place. But actually, the frozen blocks of spinach are brilliant, because you can take out, they're almost like a large ice cube. Now I chuck those into anything I'm cooking, because I don't even know it's there. It's brilliant. And it saves money because I'm not wasting stuff. And as you say, the vitamins are still all there because that process of freezing it stops it getting, you know, deteriorating because of the age of the vegetable.
What do we mean by eat a rainbow?
I think of that as things like blueberries and wonderful vegetables that are on that spectrum, the darker things, the bright yellow peppers, right through to the kales, the bright greens. So any highly coloured fruit or veg, really. You know, there's so many things that we don't eat that we used to do. You know, we had swede over at Christmas because we love swede mashed up. And it suddenly occurred to me how bright yellow that is. So therefore, I am quite convinced it's going to be one of those vegetables that are better for us. Beetroot is an obvious one.
Love beetroot.
Oh, and again, you can cheat. Well, it isn't cheating. Buy a pack of ready-cooked beetroot, not in the vinegar, because it is completely pure. You can make wonderful brownies using ready-cooked beetroot that are actually very healthy if you have a sweet tooth. And we were talking about that this morning. You know, so there are things we can eat that actually are going to help us as well. And those brightly coloured vegetables, the yellow peppers are full of lutein, all of those things, the antioxidants, the berries, kiwi fruit, very, very good for us, bright green.
See, I love roasted vegetables. So
yep.
Roasted onions,
yes.
Beetroot,
Ooh. Oh,
anything like that. And
yes.
So if you've got a meal that you're putting in to heat up, just put them in for
yes.
40 minutes and they're lovely too.
Yeah, cut them smaller, take even less time.
Absolutely right.
So
let's
if you've got something.
About serotonin. So it says here, swap carbohydrates with healthy options, root vegetables, fruit and non-wheat grains, which boost serotonin, which is a natural mood stabilizer.
Yeah, that serotonin is the thing that keeps us feeling fairly happy in a nice, stable way, as it said. And it's stimulated by a lot of the root vegetables. You know, it's something I don't think many people know about, to be honest. It would be quite interesting to have somebody that could talk to us a lot more about that, because it's certainly something I don't know a huge amount about.
Mm.
But we all know that the serotonin is the thing that you get from going outside, all of those things, the feel-good factor. Interesting that those complex carbohydrates, the white stuff as well, because we weren't intended to eat white flour, were we? It's
no.
Much more difficult process than the white rice, which we all do it. I'm most guilty about that. But it just shows that things that we're not even necessarily aware of are impacting on how we feel, not just our body and our physical health.
Okay. Before we open it up, let's just talk about keeping warm. Now,
yep.
I was contacted by my energy company recently with a challenge to reduce the amount of energy that we were using. And we've taken to putting on an extra layer, and I've been putting a little scarf on, actually, just sitting watching the telly, or as you say, working from home. So if you're spending several hours sitting in front of a computer screen, as I do, or on the phone, I find just simply putting I've got a little silk scarf I've had since I was a kid, I just put that on, and it's amazing the difference it makes. So what's the sort of recommended temperature we should keep our houses at?
Well, according to this, I got some of this information from Age UK, which
are
wonderful, and they say that 18 degrees is the absolute bare minimum, really.
Which is actually the health and safety for an office environment.
It is, but even that, I would say, if you're sitting still watching a film in the afternoon or listening perhaps to your talking book, that is still quite cool.
And also, you know, people are very different, so we can have these benchmarks. I like it quite cool. I don't like to be hot.
No.
I particularly hate being hot in bed.
Yeah.
I don't sleep well. So even at the moment, I've got my bedroom window open.
Ooh.
And I've turned off the radiator in the bedroom. But downstairs in front watching the telly, I get really cold.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? So
I think having a, you know, a fleece blanket, because they're so light, easy to lift on and off, they're brilliant because they trap the warm air as well. As you say, sitting down, that's a really good idea. And I don't know. I suspect most of our callers today will remember that this is almost a very recent problem, because when we were brought up, can you remember your mother saying, no, you're not having the fire lit it's too early, go and put a jumper on.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Or, you know, if you were doing something, we did layer up, or we did perhaps put a pair of gloves on to go out in the garden and muck. Nobody, I mean, look at the young people nowadays, they hardly ever wear a coat.
Yeah.
So I think it's thinking back to how things used to be. We've got very, very dependent on being able to flick a switch and have the house as warm as it would be in summer, which is actually not good for us because our body needs that rhythm as well. So you're right. I think turn the temperature down if you feel able to in your bedroom at night. But if you're particularly not like I am, but you're particularly slim, you're not going to retain the heat in your body as much. But layers, even on the bed, is a good idea. And we've added in here the hot water bottle bit. The microwavable hot water bottle, just again a little bit of a caveat there. If you have a fire and rescue visit to see your house safety, one of the things they're quite keen about is that if you've got an old wheat bag, and they were available, weren't they, several years back, very popular, that wheat can actually deteriorate in the bag. And if you then put it in the microwave and that wheat is not in good condition, it will heat and smoulder in the bed. So do be careful. It has to be sold as a microwavable hot water bottle, not just a wheat bag that you bought many years ago. You've had it in the cupboard and somebody in Devon Insight has put it in the magazine and you thought, oh, I've got one of those.
Yeah.
Please just be a bit cautious. It needs to be actually sold as a microwavable hot water bottle, and they don't use wheat. They will use usually ceramic beads or something that don't deteriorate. What we don't want is it smouldering at the bottom of your bed. And they have had some house fires where they've been called out to people. No one yet, I understand, severely injured, but it's still a bit scary if your bed starts to smoulder and you're in it. So be careful.
So again, talking about bed, and I mentioned my partner suffers from Raynaud's syndrome and wears socks in bed during the winter.
Oh, yes.
I've started doing that. I can't believe we're talking about our bedtime activity. But bed socks, isn't that funny? Here I am, mid-50s, wearing bed socks. But actually putting on a pair of socks makes an
incredible difference.
Judy, I have to confess, I don't wear a lot else.
I don't think our callers need to know that.
But it's amazing how it keeps you warm. Okay, we've got their drawer curtains to keep cold out from large windows. Certainly, after supper I go upstairs, I pull all the bedroom curtains and the other curtains just to keep it upstairs warm.
Yeah, an amazing difference it makes too, isn't it? And it's not a difficult thing to do. And it's also good for your security, because if there are anybody, just keeping an eye open as to people, you know, in their home, perhaps on their own. And if they can't see through the curtains, that's always going to be a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I know we've all got, a lot of us have got double glaze and even triple glaze nowadays. But if you just put your hand in front of the window, it's amazing how cool it is compared to the rest of the room.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's cheap, doesn't cost anything, and it might help save that energy bill a bit.
Okay, we've rambled on for a bit, and we sort of summarised all the stuff that's in the newsletter. You should have all received the newsletter. If any of you calling in haven't got it, we can send it out again. Or it's available on the website. I think what we'll do is we'll open up the and hopefully that's released all of you now. So is there anybody who would like to add anything to this conversation?
Oh, have we got any? Let's see who we've got. Perhaps you'd like to just, if you're happy to do so, give us a shout out so we know who we've got on the call. Oh, I can hear somebody.
Don't be shy.
No, nobody there?
No, we know there's people there.
I was going to say, assume for that we're either the system's not working, and I will just check that in a moment to make sure that we have unmuted everybody. But it would be nice to hear from you. One of the things we wanted to talk about as well today is our response to COVID and the increased numbers of people that are likely to go on to contract it. And we'd like to know from you your experiences as well.
So let me just talk about a piece of work I've been doing with in partnership really with Devon County Council. So those of you who received the newsletter in a digital format will have got it this in the last couple of days. The print version is being printed at the moment. So the next edition of the InVision magazine is actually a guide to self-isolation. And I'm just going to run through what that means and why we've done it. There's obviously the Omicron variant is spreading rapidly through the population. And Devon County Council is working with us to make sure that you've got information at hand if you are required to isolate at home. So the guide covers an introduction by myself. It talks a bit about what self-isolation is, a bit about testing and the difference between a PCR test and a lateral flow test, how to reduce the spread of COVID in your home, treating COVID at home, drinking lots of liquid and taking paracetamol, when to get medical help. There's some quite clear guidance about when things are getting serious and you need to actually get some help. Getting volunteer support with getting prescriptions and food, looking after yourself at home, that's your mental health. And obviously another thing that we talk about in this particular edition of the newsletter is our new service, which we started last week, which is our telephone chit-chat calls. So one of the questions I'd really like to ask is whether anybody who's listening has actually had COVID. So I'm interested to know if anybody... Hello?
Hello?
I can hear somebody. Hello? Has anybody there actually had COVID?
No.
Not hearing anything there. So what we're going to do is that you will receive this guide. I don't know who that is. If you receive this guide through the post, just keep it in case you need it. If you are one of those people that receives our newsletter in an audio format, you will receive the print version. And if you need an audio version, give us a call and we'll send it out for you next day delivery so you've got it on data stick. Okay. Anybody got anything that they'd like to add to the conversation?
Yes, I would. Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes, who's Yay! That?
This is Sarah.
Hello, Sarah.
I was just about keeping warm. You didn't mention the advantage of wearing a woolly hat indoors.
Good point.
Remember the stories and pictures you used to see of people like Peeps wearing a woolly hat? Well, obviously, they knew what they were doing, didn't they? Old-fashioned pictures of people in bed with their nightcap on. Well, there you are. That's a fine example.
That's a really good idea. In fact, I think they say that it's something like 30% of your body heat you lose through your head.
Yeah, so I find it makes a world of difference. It really does keep you so cosy.
That's an excellent suggestion, especially if we do get a cold snap. I think we've all been locked into a bit of a false sense of security, haven't we, Sarah? That the weather has been really quite mild down here in the southwest. And I think if we do get a cold snap, that's a really good tip.
Well, I tell you the other advantage. If somebody comes to the door and you don't want to see them, you can say, well, I'm just going out, and they'll see that you've got the hat on.
I love it.
That's really mean, isn't it?
That's lovely. So has anybody else got any ideas that we've missed?
Hello, this is Christine. I wonder if I could just add a couple of things.
Christine.
Good morning. Just to add to Sarah's idea of the woolly hat in bed, I often use just a scarf because I can then wrap it round my ears and into my neck, and if I wake up in the night, I can just sort of squiggle it around a little bit more. So I'm going to say, if you haven't got a woolly hat, try a scarf in bed. The other thing I was going to say is it's lovely to sit indoors getting a bit of sun, but if the sun has come out, if you've got a chair that you can just pop outside your door or one that you can leave there, even if it's cold, stick your coat on, your woolly hat, your gloves, a scarf, and your sunglasses, so you feel as though you're somewhere else, and go outside with a cup of coffee or a glass of wine, depending on the time of day, and that might make you feel a bit better too.
I think that's lovely.
I'm going to definitely take on board that advice. I don't know about you.
Yeah, we'll just show
with
the wine, yes.
Gin and tonic.
I
could also have mulled wine.
Oh, there's a thought.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And as it is bright, you know, dark red, I'm sure it's on that rainbow somewhere.
Absolutely right. Oh, dear.
And so can I ask, has anybody had COVID or know of somebody that's had COVID that's happy to say so? Or are we COVID-free here? I think we might be, actually.
We are.
Hello? I know of people who've tested positive for COVID and people who've had it, but none of them have been near me. I just know them over the phone.
Good. That's the best way to keep them. Keep them at arm's distance. But I think with this new one, I think we're going to have to accept that many more of us, even if we're triple vaccinated, may pick it up, but it won't be, hopefully, as bad as it would have been. But it would be really useful because, as Gray was saying, you know, there are a lot of things that we're asked to do if we contract this wretched disease. And things like telling the government you've got it are not that easy, to be honest.
No, that's right.
When you can't see.
Yeah.
As a bit of an example, you know, we forget in the office here, I was delighted somebody pointed out that one of the pieces of equipment we send out, our lovely twist lamp, we hadn't thought about the fact that how to put the lamp together, we'd relied on the manufacturer's instructions, which are in the tiniest font you could ever imagine. So thanks to somebody feeding that back to us, today we've rewritten that, it's in large print now, and every lamp that goes out will be sent with our instructions in an 18 point, actually, so it's nice and easy to read. But it's things like that that if we can hear from you, your personal experience, maybe of trying to do get a PCR test online. Even though we tell you how to do it, it's not the same as us hearing from you.
Well, to tell the truth, in the guide, I've actually suggested you use the 119.
Yeah, and let them do it.
And I just think that we've got to make it as easy as we can because the majority of our clients don't have internet access. And when you read out some of the addresses, they've got /backslashes, and it's a nightmare. I just wanted to be talk on a very personal level about COVID. Today marks the first year anniversary since the death of my sister-in-law. She contracted COVID. She worked for Debenhams. She contracted COVID, and as did her daughter and husband. And they were at home feeling rather rough. And this is going back a year ago. And if you remember, a year ago, we did not have the vaccine. So she was at home feeling rather poorly, a bit coughy, woke up first thing in the morning and was struggling for breath. Her husband went to have a shower, and when he came back, she was fighting to breathe, went into cardiac arrest. Both Scott and his daughter, who's only 20, had to perform CPR, and basically my sister-in-law died on the floor in front of them, and that was a year ago today. And I'm not wanting to be melodramatic, but I try and be impartial all the time. But from a family point of view, I just want people to really understand the importance of getting the vaccine. Poor old Nikki did not have the opportunity to have a vaccine. It hadn't been designed. And if she had it, she might still be here today. And I suppose where I wanted to go with this conversation is if you do get COVID and you are at home and you are struggling to get breath, do get help. Do ring 111 and speak to an expert. And if things get so bad, and it says in here, particularly if you're so breathless that you're unable to say short sentences, or things get very bad, or you're feeling very cold and sweaty, and you just get really, really bad, you collapse or you faint, it's really important to call for an ambulance because it can affect you very, very quickly. And I'm generalizing here, but the majority of our clients are elderly. The majority of our clients have what's called comorbidities. So we'll have diabetes or respiratory problems on top, heart issues. I suppose my message I want to get across today is don't feel bad about asking for help. So that starts with just general advice for people like us, and you've all got the helpline number on the magazine note. But if you need medical help, call 111, and if it gets bad, do dial 999.
Yeah.
Because the emergency services are there to help.
They are.
We should never feel bad about ringing for help when things are bad. I get very annoyed. A lot of you know I used to be a policeman many years ago, and I remember a guy, oh, I shouldn't say his name. Yes, I can, because he was convicted. His name was Jack Sell. And Jack used to ring every day, the fire brigade, the police, and he'd say a house was on fire. It was false calls. Well, they're the people who we don't want calling. But you as the general public, all of us, it's there to support us. So I just wanted to say, you know, if things get bad, ask for help.
And you said don't feel guilty, because unfortunately there's so much at the moment on the news about the health service being overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I think because of the sort of people we tend to deal with, everybody is, oh, I'm fine, dear. I'll be all right. Well, don't be too brave, I think is the message here, isn't it?
Right,
just call 999.
Yeah. Has anybody got anything they'd like to say?
Oops, got very quiet.
It's Christine again. Hello again. I just want to add, I haven't had to ring 99 for any COVID purposes. But I have needed to in the past, perhaps for an ill member of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to say how helpful the 999 people are when you first phone. So even if it isn't a case of the ambulance arriving immediately, they can give you some very good advice on the phone and ask questions and reassure you. So that's another bit. The call centre is a vital part of feeling reassured and supported.
I think the thing to remember is that if you dial 111 for your general health advice or you're concerned, they can soon turn that into a 999 emergency.
Yeah.
If they run through a computer screen where it asks all sorts of questions, and depending on how you answer them, it comes out with what you should do. If it is a 999 situation, they will get the wheel rolling for you.
They do. And also, if you do need to go to an A&E department,
yeah,
they give you a timed appointment. So you don't end up sitting for 2 hours on a hard chair waiting to be seen. You actually have a timed appointment.
I didn't know that.
If it goes through the 111 system.
Ah.
Yeah. So it really, there's a lot of advantages of using that, particularly if you've had a fall and you feel that, you know, you're not sure how bad it is. Honestly, that one, we have got Health Watch joining us on one of these calls. And I know that they were promoting the 111 system because of that. It's a way of making sure that people do actually get seen in A&E in a timely fashion when there is a huge demand on A&E services. So it has more than just, you know, the taking the pressure off the 999 service. It's part of that service.
So on the subject of telephone speaker events, if you remember the last one we had, we talked about setting up our sight loss forum and the reoccurring problem. And we've had people on the phone again today saying that they're receiving appointment letters in standard print rather than large print. I just thought I'd take this opportunity to say that I have now written to all four major hospitals in Devon. I've used something called a Freedom of Information Act service. So what I've done is I've asked them to basically tell me how many outpatient appointments there are for sight loss services, how many of them are DNAs, so do not attend, and also the cost, the average cost of an appointment to see either the consultant or somebody in the eye unit. And the aim of this is to try and get some evidence, some numerical evidence from them, so that I can turn around and say, you know what, if you just speculated a little bit and sent out large print appointment letters to everybody who's attending that appointment, you might actually get more people attending. Mm. So that's just a little bit of feedback there, and they've got 20 days to respond. So that's a start. Future events, as Judy said, Tuesday the 8th of February, we've got something called People in the Lead, Getting Your Voice Heard, and I've forgotten his name, David Kinross. Yeah, David Kinross, who's the Engagement and Volunteer Coordinator for Healthwatch Devon. And he'll be joining us, and we'll be basically looking at health and social care services in Devon and how you can get feedback into that. So that'll be a good thing to do. Tuesday the 8th of March, we don't know whether it's going to happen yet. I'm hoping that Carol Klein, who some of you will know from Gardener's World, we're hoping that she'll be joining us. Still hasn't been confirmed yet, but we're promoting it just in case. But if not, we'll be doing something else on that day.
It'll be a surprise.
It
will. It'll be exciting.
But, you know, things change, chop and change. And as we know, it's very difficult to get firm dates for things, and people's family situations change. And for Carol, obviously, her filming schedule is going to be the big big thing here. Do you just want to talk a little bit about chit-chat calls?
Yeah. We've got Christine on the call here, and we had our first, didn't we, Christine, on last Wednesday. And
yes,
we were
indeed.
Thrilled. It went really well. I learnt a few things, and I think that's the point, that the Wednesday calls are not going to be as formal. Not that these are particularly formal calls, that the Tuesday calls monthly, but it's even less so. So some of the actions that will come out of there, they're things for me to do. One of the things I'm really keen on, and Greg touched on it there, is that we have talked about setting up this Devon Sight Loss Forum, and several of the people that joined us on the Wednesday call have agreed to be a member of that forum. I think we've got about 6 or 7 people confirmed at the moment, which is fantastic, and over the next few weeks we'll be writing out to those members and inviting them probably to start with to a telephone call like this, to start that forum going. And that forum will be your way of telling us of all the other services in Devon that you found problems with, whether it is getting on a bus and we can phone at First Bus or Stagecoach, whoever it is, whether it's accessing your dentist, or whether it's having your hair done, or whether it's going to the swimming pool because it's not set up that it welcomes people with low vision, all of that stuff, anything to be honest at all. But more, and just as importantly, to shape how Devon in Sight works in the future, because that's really important. We want to be as effective going forward into the 21st century as we were for the 20th when we were originally set up. And I think that's something we haven't done yet.
The other thing for me is, as a charity leader, you like to think that you're voicing, but why am I the chief exec of Devon in Sight? What's the privilege here? The privilege is giving voice to a community, and this is a way for us to get that voice and get it heard. That's why, I mean, we were talking about appointment letters from the eye units when I first joined the charity nearly 9 years ago, and it still hasn't been rectified. The good news now is a lot of these people, the decision-making people, I know, and I can go to them, and I don't want to embarrass people, but, you know, to say, you know, we've been talking about this for years and it still hasn't been rectified is not good enough.
No.
And the other thing is that society is gradually shifting, so accessible information from hospitals is a legal requirement.
Mm-hmm.
So we need it that our clients know that they can ask for it, but B, that they're responding to it.
Yeah.
Now, when I last inquired about this, I was told that it was subcontracted to an outside organisation and that it was costed to the eye unit. Well, if that's the case, why don't you make it that it's a default setting for all letters coming from the eye unit, that they're in 16 points.
Yeah,
to me, that's just a simple thing to do. So we can't change the world, but what we can do is take some very practical steps that should make things easier for the majority. And one of the lovely things that came out of that chit-chat call was, for a long time, I've wanted people in the eye unit, so our professionals in health, that when they give a diagnosis and they're saying to somebody, there is nothing more that we as a hospital can do for you, that they are giving people some information in a booklet that says, here are all the other support services that are available to you in Devon. And what was lovely, and I can't remember if it was Christine or somebody else, but it was lovely to hear other people saying, you know what, I wish I'd had that sort of information right at the beginning of my journey. So again, that's becoming a bit of a priority. And I'm hoping that, you know, obviously everything we do, we have to get funding for. And I think that by hearing from our clients that that is still an issue, we can use that in our funding bids, and it becomes a particular piece of work that we can achieve. So if I do nothing else this year, I would love to get it that clients are receiving appointment letters in a format that they can read, and that newly diagnosed people or people having a substantial change in their sight loss are getting relevant information. If we can do those two things,
I'll
be happy.
Particularly
as there's only three of us, and I think that's I think that's an important thing. You know, a lot of people don't realise how small Devon Insight is. We produce the magazine in house. We do all this national policy work and stuff. We support a client group, and at the moment, we're doing that with three people.
We're small but perfectly formed.
Marvellous. I don't know what to say to that.
I think we ought to thank Jenny, actually, because many of you will call in and you get Jenny as first point of call quite often, because Jenny's the one that tends to get to the phone quickest. She knows which button to press, basically. And she does a marvellous job. She's kept the place, you know, the place going when you've been busy. I wasn't here, and Jenny's done a sterling job. But we are looking now to ask all of you, what is it you really want from us? What of those services that we currently do that you think are important? Perhaps there's something you don't think is really important. But also going forward into the future, I've had some lovely phone calls since last Wednesday call with some fantastic comments about people that are new to this journey, that they've just been diagnosed. How actually do we reach out to them? How do we promote ourselves so that they think we're actually relevant to them? Because if you're at the beginning of a sight loss journey, I don't think anybody ever calls themselves living with sight impairment. They don't think they're ready for that label yet. And so one of the things you can do to help us is if you come across people that say, oh yeah, I'm finding my glasses aren't working as well as they did. It may, you know, I'm finding now they don't help as much as they used to. They may have something else going on. Please, will you tell them, when did you last go to your optician?
Yeah.
Because I think not only do people perhaps avoid going to the optician more so than in our childhood when it was free, because they think they're going to be landed with a big bill for new glasses. But during COVID, we've also got out of the habit of going to the optician.
I think the other thing is that we think of opticians about being glasses, so what we call refractive correction, so new glasses, new contact lenses. There's also looking after your eye health, even though you've got an acute eye condition, because the pathology of your eye can change over time. So although you've got reduced vision, new things can develop. And I don't mean to be a scaremonger here, but you know there are people who will develop cataracts on top of their AMD, for example. Mm-hmm. There will be people who will develop an eye cancer. I seem to be losing a lot of friends recently. I lost a lovely lady who's a friend of mine recently, who was a costume maker at the Northcott Theatre in Exeter. She's done a lot of work with me in the past in theatre and TV productions. And she got, her eyesight was a bit odd. She went to an optician, and it was an optician who picked up the eye cancer that eventually, 2 years later, has taken her life. But I don't mean to scare people, but that's an extreme case. But getting those regular tests at an optician is really important. And I'm always saying stuff to family and friends about getting your eyes tested. I think that COVID has become an excuse for for inactivity for an awful lot of organisations. And some of them are big, powerful organisations with lots of staff and lots of money. Now, we are a small charity and we did not furlough anybody at the beginning of COVID. Everybody continued working. We had to reduce our hours to 80% just so that we had some cash flow. We've now returned to normal hours. But we continued providing services because people needed our support. Now, the problem for again, me as a charity leader, is COVID is going to be with us now for a long time. It's not going to suddenly burn itself out. It's been with us for now. Well, March is the second anniversary. So it's going to become a bit like a severe flu. So we've now got to work out how we're going to provide services moving forward, how we're safely to keep staff, volunteers and clients safe. And we've got to evolve and we've got to work in this new world. And it's a very challenging world. The country has spent an awful lot of money on things like the furlough scheme, not making so many donations. It's a challenging environment. So what we have to do as a charity is provide services that have the greatest impact for that individual, and it has to be site loss specific. There are an awful lot of very nice things that we could do if we had 20 members of staff and lots of money in the bank.
Lots of money.
So what I'm keen to do and why we're keen to get people to join in the forum is that we will run our ideas past you. I've always had a very collaborative approach to work. And when we did our big lottery bid 4 or 5 years ago now, we drew out the ideas. But actually, it got better as more people put their penny worth into it. It actually became better. So I'm not that proprietorial about what we do. I like to hear things and get feedback. I don't always agree with everybody. And the other important thing is it's not about the person who shouts the loudest.
No.
So what we do is when we did the National Lottery, we did an awful lot of research into demographics, populations. So when we were designing the areas that we were going to run services in, it was about the population that statistically most had the highest quantity of people with sight loss. So for example, East Devon. We did a lot of work in East Devon because East Devon is a retirement zone. So Sidmouth and that area, Honiton, a huge number of people. So we just want to hear from you, and you can do that through the helpline, you can do it through email for those of you who are using that sort of service. So we're down to the last sort of six minutes, really. I'm just wondering whether anybody has got anything they'd like to say, and I'm really interested to hear about future speaker event ideas. Is there somebody that you would like us to invite to come and speak at a future event? Can I throw that open to the floor?
Ooh. Silence. No, nobody got anything to contribute at this point.
Sarah?
Is Sarah still there?
Or Christine?
Yeah. No. Well,
Christine. It's whether, I don't know if other people would be interested, but it's always useful to have an update from, say, opticians on how they actually view their services and what they're offering and their links, how they can help by referring you, etc. And I don't know whether there's a benefit in looking at a speaker event in the future that would give us an update on that.
Well, what's really good is there's a chap called Jonathan, and Jonathan is he's the chair of what's called the Local Optical Committee. And the Local Optical Committee has oversight of all of the opticians in Devon. So I will see if we can get Jonathan. Yeah, I shouldn't have named him really until he's agreed to do it.
Well, but we have to have a choice.
The good news is the Local Optical Committee is based Deer Park House, which is literally
just over
the road from us.
Yeah.
So I'll see if we can get Jonathan to come and join us.
That would be good. Good idea.
And maybe we open it up to a larger discussion about opticians in the community, particularly as there has, for a number of years, there's been a wish to I can't get the word in my head, to take some services out of the hospital and into the community.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that be monitoring glycoma, I think, there are some sorts of bits of work that are now done by opticians,
mm-hmm.
Making them more cost effective, but also more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's a brilliant idea. Have we got any other ideas?
Nope, you're very quiet. I think if no one's got any ideas, I'd like to end on a rather upbeat message. Again, I talked to somebody about this yesterday, but just to remind people, or unless I may not even have told you about this before, a small company based in Bristol has offered anybody that is associated, let's say, with Devon Insight, the opportunity to use an app. Some people will be more au fait with using their mobile phone and perhaps have an app to control your Alexa, for example, on your mobile phone. But this app is designed for you to monitor your own site. And it's much more effective than many of the other ways. So if anybody out there is actually having treatment at the moment and a little concerned that there is quite a large gap between their visits for their treatment, and they'd like to know, you know, that nothing's going wrong in between those appointments, just give us a ring here and we can put you in touch with that organisation. They'll talk you through it, make sure you are appropriate to have a play on this thing. It's like playing a game. It's a bit like that field of vision test you do at the opticians, but much more sophisticated. And some of the early wins they've had, identifying some improvements in people's sight after treatment for wet AMD in particular, have been quite exciting. It's only people associated with Devon Insight and a few people from the Macular Society at the moment that have access to this app. So that's a bit of an upbeat message. And anybody that is interested in monitoring their sight because they are concerned it might be deteriorating and you can't keep going to the optician every month because they don't want to see you or it gets very expensive, this is a free way of doing a very sensitive test for yourself, basically. So I think that's quite exciting. It's the first one that I know of that is actually proving to be effective. So do pass that on if you know anybody else that is worried at the moment, that isn't on the call, that their sight may be changing rapidly and that they're perhaps not getting to see an optician as often as they would like.
Okay. So just to conclude, tomorrow is it your chit-chat call? So you've got a chit-chat call on this number that starts at 10:30. Very informal, call in, just talk about anything. Our next speaker event is going to be on Tuesday the 8th of February, and that's the one with HealthWatch. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody.
And thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. A gentleman in the background there. We didn't hear from you. We'll grab you next time.
Well, gently, I hope.
Who is that? What's your name?
Oh, it's Les.
Hi, Les. Thanks for joining us.
It was lovely. I didn't press the star button on the phone, so I had actually muted myself. So I'm learning as I go on.
We actually did override everything, so I've got a way that on this phone I could unmute anybody, so you would have been heard. But thank you so much, all of you, for joining us. And there is no pressure to actually say anything.
No.
You know, we can quite happily ramble on, but it is nice to get some feedback. And there's no such thing as a daft question either.
No, definitely not. We do that bit.
Yeah.
We'll do the daft questions.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody.
And have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.